Chapter 6. Flight from the Battlefield.
What have I done?
That was Brannis's first thought as the realization of the battle's end sunk in. All about him lay the unmoving bodies of the men he had shared a meal and tales with over the previous night's dinner, intermingled with the scrawny forms of their goblin adversaries. There were few survivors of the battle on either side. With forces well matched, and a fierce determination to prevail, both sides had fought to near annihilation. It was not until the goblins lost the last of their sorcerers, and presumably whoever had led them, that they realized that the remaining humans outmatched them, and they fled. Iridan's pyrotechnics had been the final seal upon their decision to withdraw.
Iridan!
Quickly, Brannis turned to regard the spot where his friend had fallen, wincing at the sharp pain the movement caused his right shoulder. The shoulder was not dislocated, he knew, for he still had some use of the arm, but the blast he had deflected with Massacre had wrenched it horribly. Brannis saw the few remaining men of his command congregating near a scorched spot on the ground, the center of which held Iridan's still body. It was as if the sorcerer's loss of control had created an artificial desert of parched and barren land around him, more than the length of two tall men in every direction. None of the soldiers or knights dared cross the border where the living grass gave way to the dead, scorched dust. They had all seen what happened before when one approached, for charred skeletons of former goblins lay alongside Iridan. Brannis lost track of time in a blur, his thoughts churning. He was vaguely aware of running across the battlefield and pushing past his men. Next he knew, he was kneeling beside Iridan's crumpled form, turning him and laying him flat on his back on the baked turf, which was still eerily warm to the touch. Iridan made no movement, and his limp limbs flopped helplessly as Brannis rolled him onto his back. Bending over Iridan's body, Brannis put his ear to his friend's nose. He could hear no breathing, but a rhythmic tickling of air brushed past his ear. Iridan yet lived. Brannis let out an audible sigh of relief. "He is still alive," he announced to the anxious men surrounding him. With worries for his friend at least momentarily allayed, he turned his attention to the remains of his battalion. "Any of you who are injured, see first to your own wounds. Those who are able, we must check to see if there are any who yet live among the fallen. And check the goblins too, for it would not surprise me if some felt it prudent to impersonate a corpse rather than risk becoming one." Taking stock of his own health, Brannis found that he had suffered no worse than the shoulder injury, which nagged at him. His armor bore a scorched mark in the center where the goblin blast had struck him after Massacre had turned aside most of its strength. The sword bore no mark of the impact when he found it, lying several paces from where it had flown from his hand. The weeds and grass around where the sword had lain were all dead and withered, but the mist had ceased to fall from the blade. It had depleted its reserve of ether, and would feel heavier and slower than it normally did, and the mist would not return until someone replenished the sword's store of ether. Brannis aided in the search for survivors, though he did his best not to stray far from the spot where Iridan lay. It was a grim task for all, to search among the faces of the fallen and see friends and comrades. The goblins, it seemed, had seen fit even in the heat of battle to spare a spear thrust for a downed human. Knights were plentiful among the dead as well. The attention that a knight drew on the field of battle outstripped the extra protection his superior armor provided, and the joints between plates sheared spear tips easily when they were thrust between, as the goblins intended. Of all the knights, only Brannis and Lugrin now remained. Sir Eric, made of tougher stuff than he would probably have wished, had been found still alive despite a blade broken in his side, and he had suffered greatly. Neither the means to remove the blade nor carry him without further harming him, it was with a heavy heart that Brannis took it upon himself to carry out the older knight's last request, gasped out between pained, shallow breaths. It was the first time Brannis had ever killed another human. When it was determined that there were no more survivors among the fallen, Brannis took count of his men. Aside from himself and Sir Lugrin, he had only 10 soldiers left to his command. Estimates varied from man to man as to how many of the goblins had managed to escape, but all agreed at least a handful of the little runts had managed to elude the fate of their comrades. There had been no chase, for goblins could outrun men easily enough, given how lightly they traveled. As Brannis looked into the weary faces of his men, he took note of one whom he did not expect to see among them. Jodul, when did you join the fighting? We gave you neither armor nor spear, and yet here you stand, both armored and bloodied from the battle. How came you by that armor? Though Brannis felt obliged to ask, he dreaded the likely answer. The grim necessities of war oft require unsavory deeds. But the thought of stripping the dead left a poor taste in his mouth.
Well, I saw your sorcerer was unarmored, as the fighting broke out and made no move to find it afore he started his spells. Well, in my company, our man Calyrian was always grumbling about having to go about dressed like us grunts in heavy steel and all. I figured yours must have refused to wear his, and so I sneaked into his tent when things started getting hairy and nicked his mail shirt and cap. I couldn't just sit on my arse while everyone else was fighting. He grinned sheepishly. Sorry, sir.
But wait, there were no extra spears in camp or shields, Sir Lugrin cut in. That at least I am sure of. How did you not get yours torn to bits by goblin spears?
Well, sir, I took up one of the bows your folks kept around and made use of it like a club, see? As for the shield bit, well, I never exactly made my way to the shield wall with the other fellows. I sort of snuck round the side of the battle a bit and came up on him from behind, quiet-like.
I see, Brannis replied, intrigued, despite his weariness. Well, we shall talk of it later. Right now, we must get clear of this battlefield. If the survivors among the goblins manage to return with reinforcements, we had best not be here. Gather what supplies you can carry and assemble at the riverbank. There was an uneasy stirring among the men, and they hesitated before slowly moving to obey their commander. Brannis knew what they were thinking, and he understood their reluctance. In a quiet voice, he added, I know. It pains me as well. They are our friends and brothers in arms. To leave them here to be found by wolves and crows does not do these brave men justice, but neither would our deaths, and that is what remaining to burn them would bring. It is too great a task for so few to do in haste. Our duty lies in returning to the Empire with news of these battles and the strength of the goblin presence in Kelvi Forest. Each of us must remember that, for if anyone becomes the last survivor among us, he must carry on this task. Now make haste, for we cannot know when our enemies may return in strength. At this pronouncement, his men quickened to their chore, for they heard their own anguish echoing in Sir Brannis's words. They knew that though the leaving of their comrades' bodies was a callous thing to do, they did it for a greater duty that pressed on them. The gathering of all that was fit to be carried took less time than Brannis would have thought, and for entirely the wrong reasons. Fire and blasts of ether had been hurled about with wanton savagery, that it had left little unscathed among the provisions. There was food to be had and skins of water left undamaged, but there still was not enough to fill the packs of the men who were fit to carry them. The cookware had been flung far afield by Iridan's magic and lay blood-spattered and dented in a wide swath of woods just outside of camp. Many tents were burnt and others flattened, and Brannis decided that they would leave them behind anyway as they were cumbersome to pack in haste. The bows and arrows that had been used for hunting were not to be found, and were assumed to have been consumed utterly in magical fire, and even the bow that Jodul had taken as a club had been snapped in twain in the line of duty. So it was with little more than spears and what foodstuffs they could carry that the men of Brannis's command gathered near the banks of the river. Brannis's own pack clattered under the heavy burden of 8 swords and as many signet rings, heirlooms of the knights that had fallen in battle, and which needed to be brought to their kin. From tent poles and canvas, they had made a litter on which to carry the still form of Iridan, for until the gravest peril forced them otherwise, they would carry with them the fallen sorcerer who had saved their lives that day. The fording of the river was a simple, if unpleasant, task, with only the concern for keeping Iridan from going beneath the waters slowing their progress. The river was only some 50 paces from bank to bank and chest deep in the middle. The current flowed at a leisurely pace that did little to hinder them as they crossed, though the bottom was muddy and tugged at their boots each time they lifted them. They were exhausted and still damp when they stopped at midday to rest and take a meal. Miles lay between them and the river, and they had traveled mainly north, bearing slightly eastward. The woods were lighter than they had been around the campsite, with warm, bright sunshine streaming down between the canopies of tall, thin trees that Brannis could not name. Several men removed their chain armor and the garments beneath to air them in the warm breeze and drive out the wetness that had clung to them since their fording of the river. The rest quickly followed suit, with even Sir Lugrin and Brannis taking off their heavy armor and letting it dry in the wind.
"Well, now that we've run blindly north throughout the whole of the morning, it's time we made a plan," Sir Lugrin said. "We've put distance between ourselves and the goblins, and bought enough time to let cool heads decide our course."
"I've already figured out our course," Brannis replied easily. "My mind was not idle as we trekked through the woods. Had we turned south immediately after the battle, we could have made for Corgan and reached it in 2 days, perhaps. But our message needs to reach the High Command so they can gather a force large enough to rout these goblins. A messenger from Corgan would either have to cross the Bay of Naran by boat or turn back north and take the pass through the mountains. No, from here we turn our course eastward and make for the High Pass. We shall cross over there and get horses from the garrison at Tibrik. There we can leave those fatigued or suffering small injuries and send the rest ahead to Cadrus to deliver news to the Sir Garibald and the High Command."
"I stand corrected then, for our flight was not so blind as I had thought," said Lugrin,
who obviously had wrestled with concern for his commander's prudence during their retreat northward, but had kept his thoughts to himself until just then.
"No, you were right that we went blindly. I kept our course facing northward by the sun alone. We had no map left after the battle that was in fit condition to guide our path, and I do not know precisely where we stand within Kelvi. It mattered little to my thinking, for the Cloudwall Mountains lie east of here and cannot be missed. Once we break through the tree line and reach the foothills in the shadow of the mountains, we can reconnoiter and set our path aright. The High Pass lies just south of the Cradle Peaks, and I dare say that we can judge those by sight."
Brannis thought the plan simple enough. Even with no map, the Cradle Peaks were the two tallest points in the cloud wall, and could hardly be mistaken, for they rose up as a great pair among the lesser peaks. Iridan had shown no sign of improvement since they carried him from the battlefield. His breathing was still shallow, and he had grown pale, even compared to his normally light complexion. They had not tried to rouse him to partake of their lunch, worrying that even if it was possible to revive him, it might do more harm than good. It was yet another dark cloud that hung over the mood of the weary soldiers. Brannis led his men northward through Kelvi Forest. After their meal and rest, he decided to hold their course northward until nightfall, turning eastward in the morning. He was hesitant to give away their eventual destination until he shook the nagging feeling that they were being followed. Of course, Brannis was not the only one among them who had such suspicions. Squirrels, birds, and even the rustling of the wind in the leaves of the trees above them all gave pause to those who feared pursuit by a stealthy adversary. Not every sound that was heard was so easily explained away, either. The hours wore on the nerves of Brannis's troops. It was near to dusk, and they were beginning to search for a spot to settle for the night, when a call was heard to the west.
"Hail, travelers!"
called a human-sounding voice in a high alto, ringing clearly through the evening air. Every one of them turned to see who spoke, and they saw a small figure approaching them. Through the trees and in the backlit twilight, It was hard to make out much about the man until he approached quite closely to the remains of the army. They took some comfort that his silhouette clearly showed his arms held wide, in a show of peace. But still Brannis and the others clutched their weapons with suspicious caution. When the shadow of one particular tree happened to cast the man's form in less harsh light, it provided enough relief so that his features could be seen clearly, and their tensions eased away. He was a small man, thin and of a stature similar to Iridan, who was the shortest among them. He was garbed in doe skin, unadorned and of inexpert make. His long hair hung loosely about his shoulders, of a blonde so light that in the poor light it looked nearly white. His face was smooth and pale, with angular features and eyes that were a washed-out blue, like a hazy sky. His age was difficult to judge, though he appeared to be rather younger than most of the soldiers he approached.
"Who are you?" called Lugrin before the man approached too closely.
"A resident of these parts, given to aiding refugees, it would seem. If you are men of Cadrin, I believe I have someone that belongs to you," replied the stranger, smiling, still keeping his arms spread wide to show his harmlessness.
"What do you mean?"
Brannis asked, curious whom the strange man could be referring to.
"Just last night, a man clad in armor such as yours came into my care, claiming to have fled a great slaughter. I did not put much faith in his claim, figuring he was a deserter, but it mattered not to me. Seeing you men in such a state, bloodied and dragging a wounded man along with you, lends some truth to his tale."
"Who is he? Where is he now?"
Brannis was heartened at the thought that perhaps another man had survived the battle that Jodul had spoken of the previous night. It would have been the best news he had gotten since discovering Iridan had survived his ordeal, and even that was a happiness mixed with concern. He had seen far too much killing that morning, and to find another of his countrymen alive after all the carnage would provide a welcome relief from the dull pain his heart felt.
"I have a small dwelling not far from here. It is my habit to walk about the woods by day, but your man wanted rest, and he declined my invitation to join in my daily stroll. He remains at my home," he replied, and with a slight smile, added, "and if he is of any use at all, he will have managed a fire by now. How far is it to your home from here? We are weary, and we're just now seeking a spot to make our camp for the night."
"I do not pace about the woods counting my footsteps, but perhaps this might help. Do you see yonder those two trees growing so close that their trunks almost touch?"
He pointed to the north and west. Brannis nodded that he did, for he did indeed see two trees matching the man's description, some ways distant.
"I would call it thrice that distance and half again. If we go now, it should be little trouble to reach it before the afterglow of dusk fails us."
Brannis turned his attention from the stranger to take stock of his men. They looked a wreck, like ruined men, all dirt-covered and bloody, with eyes weary from fatigue and grief. He hesitated to ask even that much more of his men for the night.
"I can take a look at that fallen man of yours as well, if that is agreeable to you. Lonely living in these reaches forces one to learn such skills if he wishes to survive,"
the stranger said. It was this last remark that firmed Brannis's resolve. They all owed Iridan their lives, and they would bear a little more, himself included, to see that he was well tended. Their task could spare them this brief diversion to the west. At Brannis's order, they followed the forest hermit to his home.
"I see no wound of any consequence upon him. What befell?"
The hermit had led them to a small cottage among the trees, not even in a clearing, but in a space among the trees. It looked well made, but of a simple sort, logs forming the walls and thatch serving as roof. A small pond just beyond the cottage was home to a large number of pink waterflowers that had the tended look of a garden about them. There was no sign of the lost soldier when they arrived, though his armor was piled in a heap by the cottage door. The hermit assumed he had gone for more firewood and said nothing more of him, instead turning his attention to Iridan's condition.
"He's a sorcerer," Brannis said. "His name is Iridan, and he saved our lives this morning using magic that was beyond his power to command."
Brannis wanted to be sure the man knew of Iridan's bravery and sacrifice before revealing his foolishness. The ether raged out of control and nearly destroyed him. He survived, but is as you see him now. Can you do anything for him?
It is good that you brought him here to rest, for it is rest he needs most. I do not know how far you dragged him along behind you, but it did no good for his condition, the young hermit said. I can tend to him to speed his recovery, but he would do best to stay put while he convalesces. There is likely no lasting damage if he has lived this long after the incident, but he has likely burned his body's fluids dry and needs to recover them. He will awake again with a headache, I do not envy, but he should awake again.
How long until he will be well enough to travel?
If you are fleeing from the goblins like my other charge was, be at ease. You may abide here until your sorcerer recovers, which could be by morning or in several days. I've seen goblins while walking about these woods, but they do not approach this place. Patience in matters such as this serves well.
He waved a hand vaguely about the area.
There is game to be had here if you fancy more than herbs and plants for your food.
No, we cannot stay, even if it is safe here as you suggest. Brannis glanced somewhat suspiciously at the hermit. We need to get word to the Empire of the presence of such a large force in Kelvi Forest. Do what you can for Iridan, but we must leave in the morning.
Then at least leave your sorcerer here to recover. I admit that it will not harm him further to travel, so long as someone tends to him, but neither will he recover quickly. Think this over before making your choice.
All right, but I do not like to think of leaving Iridan behind, especially considering what he has just done for us. Brannis stood to go check on the rest of his men as they made ready to partake of dinner before turning in. By the way, I am Sir Brannis Soloran, commander of the 8th Battalion of the Kadrin Army. He removed his gauntlet and extended his hand to the hermit. The hermit accepted the outstretched hand with a wry smile.
Soloran, is it? A name for sorcerers, or so I was given to think. Is your young sorcerer friend descended of the Westel line, then?
The Westels were an influential noble family with a long history of distinction among the Kadrin military. Brannis raised an eyebrow. You have more knowledge of the Empire than I would expect of one who lives out here.
Tales of children raised by wolves are no more than fanciful stories and folklore. Even those who choose to live in solitude come from somewhere.
It is only the most recent portion of my life that has seen me living thus. The hermit turned his attention back to Iridan for a moment. Then, looking satisfied with his patient's condition, stood up from where he crouched beside the still form of the sorcerer.
I believe I should find out what has become of our deserter friend. It should not be taking him this long to find his way back.
The hermit calmly turned and walked off in search of the soldier who was lost once and appeared lost again. Without the din of his own men's footsteps all about him, Brannis noticed that the hermit made hardly a whisper of sound when his soft shoes touched the forest floor, though he made no visible effort to quiet his footfalls. It was not until the strange young man was out of sight that Brannis realized that his offer of his name had not been returned in kind. The man's question about Iridan's ancestry and the comment about his own family legacy of sorcery had put him off his guard and distracted him from his first line of thinking. Who is this peculiar man who lives in Kelvi Forest? For whatever reason, the comment about Iridan nagged at him. He and Iridan had been close friends ever since they met as students at the Imperial Academy, which was as far back as Brannis's recollections of childhood stretched. He could hardly remember a time in his life before they had known one another.
It had always been a sore point with the sorcerer that he came from common stock.
His magical talents had developed at a very young age, and he was taken in as a ward of the academy to hone his skills in service of the Empire. Most of the students at the academy had sorcerous bloodlines that could be traced back innumerable generations. A few talented peasants and children hailing from the occupied lands were allowed admittance, but were widely scorned by the better-bred students. Small and frail, as unimposing as a child can be, Iridan's life would have been miserable if a certain gregarious prodigy had not taken him under his wing. Brannis had originally felt a sense of noblesse oblige toward protecting Iridan, a strong sense of superiority being a trait learned early as a scion of the Soloran clan. Eventually, a genuine friendship had developed, and then remained into their adulthood. Iridan was, in fact, the only sorcerer who was willing to join the expedition under Brannis' command without being coerced. It was little wonder, of course. Iridan owed him many favors. He still remembered the first.
Ouch! Hey, stop it! Help!
A young boy lay on the grassy courtyard of the academy grounds, pinned by one of his fellow students, who was pummeling him. It was midwinter, and the chill in the air kept all the students bundled warmly in woolen coats, hats, and mittens at the insistence of their instructors. Despite the fact he could not make out the features of either combatant from where he stood, some dozen paces distant, Brannis recognized the voice of the boy being beaten. It was that quiet boy, Iridan, the one who had taken to following him around for most of the week since he had first arrived. It seemed that he could not leave the kid alone for even a few moments without him getting bullied. Well, hopefully the mittens will keep the punches from hurting too much. A quick sprint covered the distance that separated Brannis from the action, and he tackled the boy who had pinned Iridan. He landed heavily atop the aggressor and knocked him clear of where Iridan was lying, pinning the bully in turn, face down in the cold grass.
Thank you, Master Brannis, young Iridan addressed his savior.
Iridan scrambled to his feet to get out of the way of the fighting. Brannis was the tallest boy in their class, and this was not the first occasion when he had to step in and defend his diminutive friend in the short time they had known each other. Brannis did not answer back right away, instead struggling to roll his opponent over to pay him back for hitting Iridan. The boy was Brannis's size, which meant he must have been an older student from one of the other classes, and he was putting up a mighty struggle to get out from under Brannis. Still, Brannis was determined and held the advantage of leverage. Eventually, he managed to turn the older boy over so he could punch him in the face a few times, just as he had done to Iridan. Just as Brannis had drawn back his fist to land a wicked punch, he stopped short, stunned.
She's a girl.
There were nearly as many girls enrolled at the Imperial Academy as there were boys. Still, the last thing he expected to see when turning over the boy who had been beating Iridan was a pair of sparkling green eyes looking back into his own. The eyes of someone who was, quite clearly, a girl. Brannis's moment of surprised inaction was short-lived, for along with those eyes came the furrowed brow and clenched jaw of a very angry young girl who happened to be a bully. After a brief moment of darkness, Brannis's vision cleared, and he saw the sky framing that same face of a girl who had, as far as he could tell, just slugged him in the face. Another blow followed the first, as the girl had pinned Brannis in turn, but he was not Iridan. Heaving the girl off him, he rolled back on top of her, but he could not very well punch a girl. After another brief struggle, Brannis managed to pin the girl face first on the frozen ground, and this time, instead of trying to hit her, he simply sat down on her back.
Hey, get off me, she yelled.
She kicked her feet and tried to punch at Brannis, but she could not put any strength behind her punches. When she tried to struggle to her feet, Brannis just pushed her back down. There may have been little difference in their height, but Brannis was clearly the heavier of the two. The girl was tall, but scrawny.
Not until you say you're sorry to Iridan and promise to leave him alone. What? No, you cannot make me, came the indignant reply.
Well, I have nowhere to go until dinner time, and I'm not letting you up.
I will get you for this. You best let me up.
The girl was starting to sound frantic now. Well, I would say that is not a very good reason to get off you.
What if I do not want to be got, huh?
Maybe you just cannot hear me clearly. Let me help you with that, Brannis said and plucked the knit woolen hat from her head. A long cascade of reddish-gold hair fell loosely to the ground about the girl's head, tied with green silk ribbons that would have been quite pretty had they not been crushed up under her hat, along with her tangled hair.
Hey, give that back!
No. She remained silent after that, refusing to give in. Brannis was running short on ideas and was starting to think that maybe he should just let Iridan punch her a couple of times and call it even. Then he noticed she was starting to tremble. It was a bitter day, made worse by strong breezes that seemed to cut right through clothing and chill one inside and out. though the mop of hair that had fallen from her hat obscured her face.
He could still see her ears,
and they were beginning to redden from the cold. Then there was the sniffling, and that was the deal-breaker.
I have gone and made her cry, he thought in dismay.
Trying to maintain his tough attitude despite feeling as low as if he had just kicked a puppy, he pressed the hat roughly back onto the girl's head and got off of her. Still sniffling, though she did not seem to be aware she was doing so, she stood up and glared at Brannis. Hair stuck out every which way from under her hat, which had been pushed down nearly over her eyes, red-rimmed and watery. Despite her pitiful state, she looked at Brannis squarely in the eye. I do not care if you promise or not, Brannis told her. You are not going to beat up Iridan anymore, got it? He's my friend, and I am not scared of you.
The girl thrust out her chin in defiance, but spun about and ran off towards the girl's dormitory before she began to cry in earnest.
Brannis then turned around to check on Iridan, who had hidden behind him when the girl got up.
Brannis, your nose is bleeding.
Ah, Iridan, how long have I been keeping you out of trouble?
Brannis's thoughts returned to the present. He had always thought of Iridan as sort of a younger brother, though in truth Brannis was the younger by half a season. The girl, he had learned shortly after that incident, was Juliana Archon, the High Sorcerer's granddaughter. She was a summer ahead of Brannis and Iridan at the Academy, and was now a member of the Imperial Circle. With so many more pleasant memories of Juliana to choose from, he wondered why his wandering thoughts had chosen that one. After a brief moment of reflection, he supposed it was because he had been thinking about Iridan before he began daydreaming, and Iridan had not been present for any of the best ones. By the time the hermit returned to camp, Brannis's men had set a small fire and begun eating from the meager rations that had been salvaged from their campsite. Having left their broken pots behind,
they had taken the liberty of searching the hermit's small home in hope of finding something suited to the task of cooking a meal in.
Finding the tiny cottage to be sparse of all but the barest of amenities, less than the barest by some estimations, and with no pots or kettles to be found, they had been forced to spit the meat on sticks and hold it over the fire. Two small bowls were all that the hermit kept to eat from, and they were of little use in cooking meat. Following the hermit was a brown-haired man carrying an armload of firewood. He was a stranger to Brannis and his men, though Jodul's mouth gaped dumbly at the first glance of the man.
Todd, you're alive!
Jodul cried out in the man's direction. Forgetting all else, Jodul let his dinner slip from his hand and fall back into the fire. He rushed over to Todd with almost childish glee. Todd smiled and dropped the firewood in self-defense as Jodul bowled into him, crushing him in a bear hug.
Well, for the time being, until you squeeze the last of my breath out of me, Todd said.
Jodul eventually released him from his grasp and helped him gather up the firewood. During the remainder of the evening, Brannis listened as Todd and Jodul exchanged tales of their escapes. By Todd's account, he had been lucky to escape with his life. He described the feeling that his flight had been dogged by the goblins, though he could never catch sight of them. From what Todd had been able to gather from the hermit, his course had taken him mostly to the north and east from where Sir Farron had met his demise. When Todd had come to the river, the same one that Brannis's men had crossed just that morning, he had decided to chance a fording in the hopes that the goblins would not be able to follow. His plan had worked, at least to his mind, for the nagging sense that he was being followed had not returned since he reached the northern bank of the river, and some hours later, he had been found by the hermit. In his brief time in the hermit's care, Todd had learned little of the man. The odd young man helped clean the small cuts and scrapes that he had incurred while madly scrambling to escape a foe he was sure had followed at his heels. He had then provided Todd with a bit of a meal in the form of some very tasty nuts that were to be found aplenty in the surrounding woods. After that, though, he had mostly let Todd alone to do as he pleased, disappearing into the woods on some unknown and unexplained errand for hours on end. Brannis noticed that in all Todd's account, he never mentioned having learned the hermit's name. In time, the talk and tales died down as weariness of both body and heart overcame the beleaguered soldiers. The hermit took Iridan inside the cottage to shelter him from the chill breezes that were wont to grace the autumn nights, and from any rain that might fall, for clouds had covered the night sky and threatened a storm. The rest of them, the hermit included, for there was no room for two to sleep within the tiny cottage, found what comfort they could on the soft forest floor. There were blankets to be had from the salvage of the battlefield, but not enough for all to sleep upon them. Brannis and Sir Lugrin opted to allow the common soldiers what comforts they could find, and went without. The hermit merely sat cross-legged with his back against a tree, and rested his chin on his chest, seeming unconcerned by the elements or the loss of the shelter of his cottage for the night. It had been a long day indeed for those who slept beneath the forest canopy that night, starting at dawn with an ambush by goblins, and followed by a long march through the woods, carrying whatever they could manage, including an unconscious sorcerer. Within a span of several moments, Brannis heard a chorus of snores and slow, deep breathing, and knew that the others, at least, could find slumber. He was keenly aware of his own exhaustion, and felt the welcoming call of sleep, felt quite keenly the need to give in and put an end to a day he had wished had never happened. But he could not. Something in him resisted the call. He was sure that the something that kept him awake was his conscience, for every time he closed his eyes, he saw Sir Eric's face there, wincing in anticipation of Brannis's killing stroke. Unable to help himself, and sure that his men were asleep, Brannis quietly wept. A soft touch on his shoulder startled him from his reflection, and he quickly choked back the tears. The young hermit stood over him, though he had not heard him approach.
"Come," the hermit whispered. "This is unseemly, and you would not wish to wake them to see it."
With that, the hermit wove a path among the sleeping men and into the night. Rubbing his eyes to clear them, Brannis rose to follow. The sudden shock had brought his mind back to the present, and his curiosity had been roused. Having some other subject to occupy his thoughts was a welcome development. The hermit did not look back to see if he was being followed. He seemed to know, though Brannis did his best to tread lightly and make no noise. They walked for a distance Brannis found difficult to judge in the dark, cloudy night, but they had gone well beyond sight of the cottage. That thought made Brannis wish he had carried his sword with him, but he was not in the habit of wearing his sword belt to bed, even on occasions when necessity dictated that he sleep in his armor. Massacre lay safely in its sheath, next to that very armor. Arriving at last at a large fallen log, the hermit appeared satisfied that they had reached a suitable spot, and he sat down upon it. He motioned for Brannis to join him.
"Why would a leader of men cry himself to sleep?" the hermit asked simply.
"What concern is it of yours?" Brannis answered. He had been sure that he was the only one awake, or he would have fought harder against letting his feelings overcome him.
"A fair question. I am one who sees too few people these days, and I make assumptions too readily about those whom I meet. One of my assumptions about you was wrong."
"And just what assumption was that?" Brannis let his annoyance with the hermit's prying push to the forefront of his thoughts to banish his guilt.
"Well, I had assumed that you were a typical cold-blooded, hot-headed knight who dreams of glorious battles and tales sung in his honor. Yet you were grieving for the men you lost today, were you not?"
"Just one, really," Brannis admitted. "He was one of the knights I commanded. He had taken a belly wound and was going to die slowly. It was the first time I had ever killed another human."
"Ah, I see."
A sardonic smile curled one side of the hermit's mouth. Brannis furrowed his brow in confusion.
"It has all been play up until now. The ordering of soldiers about on the field of battle, the salutes, the yes sir and no sir. It all seemed like a grand game until things got bloody."
"I have seen battle before, and killed ogres and goblins. I've seen men die, and it grieved me then as well. But this time, I did it myself, with my own sword. Maybe if I had not used my own sword, a cursed thing fit only for striking down foes, not killing for mercy. But there it was next to me, my sword, the one that I used to kill one of my own men.
"Do you feel better now?"
the hermit asked. Brannis was taken aback and struck dumb momentarily.
"I wager you never would have said that to any of your own men, except perhaps that sorcerer friend of yours, for whom you have shown so much concern. So do you feel better, having told someone?"
"Maybe, a little." The hermit simply smiled. "And now that I'm a bit relieved of that burden, I'm reminded of something. You never did give your name when I introduced myself," Brannis said.
"My apologies. My name has often been a source of ill feelings for people and is part of the reason I live here alone in the wilds. By long habit, I do not give it unless someone asks explicitly."
Brannis looked at him, waiting for him to continue. The hermit smiled back. "So what is it? Your name?" Brannis finally asked.
"My name is Rashan. I have grown to dislike it, but I find it a curiously difficult thing to lie about," he replied.
Brannis tried without success not to laugh, despite his mood. "Well, that would explain why you've gone into hiding. What kind of parents could name a child that? No offense, but why not just go by another name?" Brannis asked. In his time at the Imperial Academy, Brannis had learned of the history of the Kadrin Empire, and the name Rashan was prominent among the annals of the Empire's most bloody era. Rashan Solaran. Brannis was unfortunately a distant relation of the long-dead sorcerer, was the last and most notorious of the Empire's warlocks. A ruthless conqueror in the height of his power, Rashan had been responsible for the destruction of entire armies and had brought many independent realms under the control of the Emperor.
There was still a phrase in common use,
Rashan's bargain, which was used to describe either a threat disguised as a choice or a truce used as cover for an ambush. It was used most often by those whose lands had fallen into imperial control during Rashan's time, and it was far from complimentary. It was an accusation of a planned betrayal, worse than negotiating in bad faith.
"I see you know a bit of history then, Brannis. Though, since you call yourself Solaran, that would seem only natural that you recognize the name. As for why I choose to keep the name, well, I've considered it from time to time, but I never could get used to any other. To my mind, Rashan and me are one and the same. I cannot think of myself by any other. And as far as concerns my parents, think of them what you will. They gave me the name, and I've learned to live with it."
The hermit, Rashan, rose from the log and began to walk back towards his cottage.
"Now that you have my secret, I trust you not to make a fuss over it in front of your men. I doubt many of them have much of a grasp of history, but that accursed idiom has plagued the name Rashan for all time, it would seem. I do not keep pitchforks or torches lying about, but I am sure the superstitious peasant folk you command could make do with swords should they choose to decide to rid themselves of an unfortunately named stranger."
"Wait," Brannis called quietly after Rashan, concerned not to let his voice carry as far as where his men lay sleeping. "What do you mean by that? Do you think that my men will kill you just because of some coincidence about your name?" Brannis got up and followed after the hermit. Still walking, Rashan replied, "I expect them to think it an ill omen, and yes, perhaps even to try and end my life. I'm sure to be blamed for anything that goes amiss. That is how the ignorant get by in life. They blame that which they do not understand for their troubles. I know these woods well, and could probably elude any of you for longer than you would care to look, but I do not wish to be driven away. I'm concerned for your sorcerer friend, Iridan, and would not leave him unattended if I am able." He shot Brannis a sharp look, and his point was all too clear. "He will take care of Iridan, but I must ensure that the rest of the men do not find out his name. I wonder if I should not have asked him in the first place." Brannis followed Rashan back to the cottage in silence. His mind was now a blur of varied worries, and the dark thoughts that had haunted his mind and driven away sleep now had company in plenty inside Brannis's head.
What drove this hermit, Rashan, into seclusion? Was he persecuted because of his name? Or was there some other reason?
That was something to consider, certainly. Brannis sighed, knowing as well that he had gotten caught up as a keeper of an unwanted secret.
What if I let slip his name in front of one of the commoner soldiers? Would he really be in danger from them?
As Brannis lay once more on the soft forest floor, the weight of his fatigue pressed down on him anew. But now, without the recurring vision of Sir Eric's face to afflict his thoughts, he was able to surrender, finally, to the urgent calling of his body for rest. Rashan, who had watched through half-closed eyes until the rhythmic rise and fall of Brannis' chest proclaimed his slumber, quietly arose from the tree against which he had rested and went to check on Iridan.